welcome to another episode of Offsides, your favorite football and hockey podcast. Starting off with our NFL talk here for today, Rob Gronkowski, legendary tight end, recently was talking on a podcast about his future in the NFL, if he's going to retire, if he's going to go back to Tampa, what it kind of looks like. And he gravitated towards the Cincinnati Bengals, saying that he loves Joe Burrow's play style, his swag, everything about that team, and said if he continued to play, he'd love the opportunity to play with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. Do you think that this is something that the Bengals should seriously consider, or do you think that it's time that he just hangs it up like Tom did?
Well, after Tom's previous comments of how he doesn't know how he'll feel in 6 weeks and Gronk hinting towards a year 12 consistently on social media and just how he answered that question, I believe the question was, what young quarterback would you love to play for in the league if you could like do it all over again? And he said Burrow because of his swag kind of matches Gronk's style. But I mean, it'd be smart for Cincinnati to pursue it. Don't get me wrong. They have the cap space to do it. Obviously, he would help their team as he's one of the greatest tight ends to ever play. But also at the same time for Gronk, business-wise, person-wise, does it make any sense for him to go to Cincinnati after he left the cold, wintry New England, and now he's living in sunshine state of Florida? Same with, like, Tom. He left the rugged weather down to the sunset. It's like – California would be the only place that I could see them other than Florida or maybe even Houston, Texas, Dallas, you know, somewhere warm. I don't see these guys going to a cold climate, especially with no indoor practice facility that Cincinnati has. A guy late in his career, I don't know if he's going to want to go through all that again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like you said, like if I'm the Bengals, I at least hear him out, see what his physicalness, if he still can play at a high level, money, what he's looking to get. but yeah, as you mentioned, for him to leave New England and go down to Florida, I mean, later in guys' careers, usually they gravitate towards those warmer weather teams or just a team that plays indoors to take the elements out of it. But I don't know. It's definitely going to be interesting. Of all the teams that he was interested in, it kind of came out of left field to me for him to say the Bengals. I mean, it makes sense. Young, upcoming team. They're in the Super Bowl in a couple days here, but yeah, I don't know if it makes sense for both sides entirely to pursue this.
But also, it ultimately depends on what Gronk wants. Like, if he really wants to try to go win a couple with him, hey, like, props to him. I know he planned, like he said, that he'll only be signing one-year deals for the rest of his career because he wants to be in control of his destiny every single season. Mm-hmm. What a lot of vets do at the end of their career, sign one-year deals in case the grass is greener somewhere else, or at least it seems like you have a better opportunity, you're going to jump at it. So I feel like a lot of this indication does play on Tom. If he officially stays in retirement, if he comes out, what that looks like going forward for Tampa. But, I mean, nothing – he Rob's one of those guys that he would do something like this, you know? Like, I feel like he is the type of guy to – he's all about doing what he loves to do and just having fun. And I feel like wherever he can have fun and kind of just do his thing, especially how he loves Joe Burrow's swag and the swag of like that Bengals team, I feel like that fits him personality wise. But yet, like I said, how much money is he going to want? They do have to re-sign a handful of guys on their team. Thankfully, at this point, Burrow and Chase are still on their rookie deals, but they're going to have to save some room for when they have to up those guys for long term.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens in a couple of weeks here. If, I mean, even if it gets done during free agency, could be a late kind of pre-training camp kind of thing that goes through to where Gronk changes his mind and wants to, like, maybe he doesn't want to play. And then, like Tom said too, as far as a couple months from now, I don't know what, like, I might change my mind. So even for him, despite announcing his retirement and everybody kind of watching that come to an end, I mean, these guys dedicate their lives to something for so long. It's hard to just make up your mind and walk away and not have second thoughts about it.
Especially for Gronk. How long does he plan on wanting to walk for? The type of style that he plays.
Yeah.
Especially already the back surgeries, the injuries he's already had. Like, that's something I feel like he also takes into consideration a lot as well, is like, one more bad time and could be it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with how banged up he is.
Yeah. I mean, he has a couple Super Bowls already. He's arguably the greatest tight end ever. He's in that conversation. Like, enjoy some of your years while you're still in your prime physically as well. Because, I mean, the dude's got enough money to do whatever he wants, and he's still young and seems like he's in amazing shape to still pursue whatever other passions he has outside of football.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, him being young, it's one of those rare cases of he can retire on his terms instead of being forced out of the game by an injury or not being mm-hmm. wanted anymore. I feel like being in control of that destiny is a huge boost to morale as far as when your career comes to an end, because you do have to move on eventually at some point. And
mm-hmm. everybody likes to do it on their own terms, not because the team forced them out and nobody wants them or an injury, like you said.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good points there. And then on to my question for you here, talking about America's team.
Who's that?
Despise them keeping both of their despite them keeping both of their coordinators, Dan Quinn and Kellen Moore, both who were sought to go take head coaching jobs somewhere else. They keep the band together. They finished 12-5 this season, top of the East. Obviously, they lost their first round game against the Arizona Cardinals. Do you see this team improving 49ers. From or yeah, excuse me, the 49ers. Do you see them improving this year from where they were at now, as far as whether it's record, just looking better as a team, maybe taking one step further in the postseason, or do you see a decline and maybe some changes made during the middle of the year?
I honestly can see them right where they finished this year, next year, kind of top of the NFC East. I mean, there's still big question marks as far as, I mean, the Giants really aren't expected to make a whole lot of noise. The Eagles seem like the biggest competitor out of the East. But even still, the Cowboys dropped, what was it, 51-14 in that game, week 17, week 18, whatever that was. So even still, like, Dallas has proven that they still control the East. So, I mean, I see them getting back to the postseason once again. But also, they had a super easy schedule this year because it was like week 11, week 12 when they played the Chiefs was the first time, aside from Tampa to kick off the year, was the first time that they played a team with a winning record or a playoff team for in the first three quarters of the season. They didn't play anybody relevant. So if they have a harder schedule, I think that record-wise, obviously, I don't see them finishing 12-5. But again, I do see them getting back to the postseason, top of the NFC East. Maybe they make it to a divisional round. I don't know. It's going to take a lot of convincing for me to see them. Oh, they could be in it. Like, they could make it to a Super Bowl. They could be in an NFC Championship. But beating up on the NFC East six times a year and then getting a handful of easy games outside of that as well, like, that doesn't convince me enough. And that's why this year I wasn't making a whole lot of noise for me, despite being the number one offense and this and that. It's like, okay, yeah, but look at the teams you played all year. So if they have a similar schedule, I see them exactly where they're at, but if they have a harder schedule, obviously their record is going to be less, but I don't know. I mean, as far as the people they have to, like you mentioned, they're bringing back their coordinators is obviously good for the team, but at what point, like Zeke, he's one of the most known running backs in the league, but he hasn't been relevant for the last 2 or 3 years because he's been hurt. They've taken touches away from him. They're getting Dak 300-400 yard games and kind of forgetting about the run game. Like, teams that have become super one-dimensional don't make it too far in the league. And if the Cowboys continue to trend that way of living and dying by Dak Prescott, going for those 400-yard games, again, come playoff time when they meet dynamic teams, that's going to be an issue for them as well.
Yes, I'm going to disagree with you here. I think that they do take a step forward, and obviously, like you said, depending on who they play during the regular season record might vary, but I'm going to throw that out the window because it's all about winning the Super Bowl. Whether you had a good season or not doesn't mean really fuck all.
Yeah.
And this Cowboys team, like you mentioned Zeke, I feel like it's very deceptive. Like it seemed, like you said, how his stats have gone way down. Actually, this is one of the, like, 237 carries, he had over 1,000 yards. I mean, that's pretty good to still be hitting 1,000 yards and your carries have been going down. He averaged 6.2 yards a carry. Granted, he didn't have that many touchdowns like he normally does, being that receiving back, because they do use Tony Pollard quite a bit. I feel like it's all going to come down to Dak next season. On their defense, obviously, is only going to get stronger, as that's a really young core. And they're, you know, they pretty much kept or are keeping almost every single person that they have as they're all, you know, signed to contracts. I feel like the part where this team almost needs to make a move, get rid of, they have too many wide receiver weapons that they don't know what to do with. I feel like it's what everybody made it seem like the Odell problem was. He needs targets. I feel like it almost seems like Amari Cooper is that guy, where he's just unhappy, upset if he doesn't get targets. He doesn't play very well on the road. Who's the one guy that they got hurt this year?
Gallup.
He is their deep threat. CeeDee Lamb has more become their number one traditional receiver. Obviously, Amari Cooper helps, but at the cost that you're paying him, and it almost feels like Dak tries to force him the ball at some point, like at some points during the game, because he knows how he'll get upset or cause waves. That, I feel like, is their problem if it is going to bring them down. But I see this team gluing together, gelling together one more year. And I think they do take one step forward. Who knows if they do end up getting to a Super Bowl? Obviously, it's been a long time coming for the Cowboys. And it was really funny. I listened to a conversation earlier today with Michael Irvin. And they're just like, yeah, everybody's like, oh, the Cowboys haven't won in this long. And you're just like, but you still have to include all the history in the history if you're going to go back. We got five of those motherfuckers. He's just like, you can't deny that. He's just like, look at the Bengals now, how long it's been. They're finally, you know, you got to include all the history when they do that. And that's a really good point. And just looking at the overall history of this team, little by little, it does seem like they have made 1% gain. Mike McCarthy, obviously, some of his tactics are questionable at times as far as, like, management. But who knows if that's addressed in the offseason. And I feel like they do take another little step forward. Like, they're the one team that said every year, oh, they're going to the Super Bowl because on paper they have the play. Like, they do a very good job of putting together a really good roster every single season, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, they're like the Patriots in that way, as far as dynasty of having great teams, like winning the NFC East all the time. Like, they're a very good team. But where they lack is I don't know. I don't even really know where, like,
just execution in the big moments.
Yeah, and that almost seems like, because it hurts them because they are in that division, that they're almost kind of like handcuffed when it comes to getting into the postseason, because you are playing teams that are next level. But obviously what goes around comes around. There will be a time that maybe the NFC East is the best division in the NFC and they do compete for it. But I do think they make a step forward. I don't see them, you know, coming out as favorites to win the Super Bowl next year like they were this year. I feel like it's a hold your horses. Let's just worry about making one step first before we try to take five.
Yeah. Yeah, because so often the team, like, I can't remember the last time that, oh, this team's the favorites to go the distance, make it. Because there's that pressure. The statistics are there that one seeds rarely ever make it to the distance through the playoffs.
If not win it.
Yeah. And, I mean, it seems like teams that kind of go under the radar, like the Rams, they're under the in the shadow of the Bucs and the Packers the whole postseason until the NFC Championship, when it's like, holy shit, these guys are one win away from making it the distance. And then the Bengals, everybody talked about the Titans. Oh, they're getting Henry back. Oh, they lost. Oh, the Chiefs are the real deal. Oh, the Bills, they're going to get back to an AFC. Oh, no. Oh, okay, yeah, the Bengals. I guess, like, it's always that pecking order of teams that fall out of the top two that everyone talks about are always there, the ones there in the end, because people least expect them to be. And that gives them that motivation, that chip on their shoulder, and allows them to operate in the shadows and be successful without worrying about teams catching on to your schemes, your plays, the way you run games, things like that.
Yeah, and it's also about catching fire at the right time. Like, it's all about catching fire at the right time. And that's exactly what this Bengals team did. They got beat back-to-back games. Chargers whooped their ass 41-22, and then they lost to the Niners in overtime. After that, they played tremendous football. I'm not counting the last week of the season because they literally rested every single person on their team, and they still only lost by five. This team, I'm glad I saw it coming as far as my pick in the beginning of them getting to the bowl. They are a true, like, that true team. They have that swag. There is no fear. They're like a wild card in the deck. Like, you have no idea what to expect out of this team at all times. Like, you could be up 18 points going into halftime. Look what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this team is, and from the beginning of the year, they've embraced that role all year long. Beginning of the year, not one person thought the Bengals were making it to the bowl. Now look at, they've embraced that underdog mentality. And like I mentioned on yesterday's podcast, all the pressure lies on Los Angeles in this game as far as glitz and glam. They have everything you need. You go to the Bengals, they don't even have a fucking indoor practice facility. Practicing next to a steel plant underneath a highway. Like, it'd be tremendous for them to – I feel like the whole state of Ohio is behind them as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the – I feel like a lot of the country is rooting for the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all going to come down to, like we talked about yesterday, can that offensive line slow down Aaron Donald? How many picks does Matt Stafford have? Does he turn the ball over? And there is going to lie your game.
Yeah. Over to the ice here. Starting out with our Carolina Hurricanes here. Kind of been talking about them a little bit more recently as far as their upward trend. And them starting out with back-to-back games outside the All-Star break, both of them being losses. Yesterday we talked about their overtime loss to the Maple Leafs, and then last night, identical score, 4-3 loss to the Ottawa Senators. Kind of a a blow to the belt in that game. In the Metro, with those two losses, things are tightening up more and more. They set at 65. Rangers and Pittsburgh are both on their heels at 64 points apiece. The Hurricanes had an opportunity to kind of run away with it in the Metro. Do you think that they're leaving the door wide open now for Pittsburgh, New York, even Washington to take to come catch them?
I don't. Last night, all betting odds, I would have bet against Carolina after going the distance and in overtime against Toronto, and you're playing your backup goaltender. They just got beat last night. Simple as that. On a back-to-back night, those are always tough. No, is their defense and their like their defense is tremendous. Like they've only given up 106 goals, which is insane. The next closest is the Islanders with five games less played. They've given up 105. So it goes to show how good of a defensive team they are. And that's what it's going to come down to. All it takes is one goal and getting to shut down defensive mode, getting pucks deep. It's how you exhaust teams, and it's an easy way to win a game as long as you're not turning the puck over in your own end.
Yeah. Yeah, even though, as you mentioned, in that game, I mean, back-to-back nights are always tough. They go into the third period down 4-0. So that's where, even though, yeah, you drop back-to-back games, it's to one of the worst teams in the league. In that third period, they score three goals, which is amazing. That doesn't happen very often, to where you score more than two goals in a single period in the NHL. So I'm obviously a little too late as far as them trying to make a surge and try to force that game to overtime. But yeah, the fact that they kind of came alive late in that game and showed, okay, yeah, we shit the bed the first two periods here. We got blanked, unable to find the back of the net. Yeah, I'm not too concerned either. Although it was just like, I mean, anytime you're a top team and you lose to one of the bottom teams, it's a little concerning. I mean, no matter what, regardless of back-to-back nights, backup goalie, things like that. But as far as the grand scheme of things, they're still in the driver's seat. Again, with less games played than New York and Pittsburgh, and they still have a lead. And if I remember correctly, they play both Boston of them coming
tomorrow.
Up. They play Boston, Wild, Panthers. Yeah, they do play the Penguins next Sunday. And then some sprinkling some kind of lower teams there as well. So, obviously it'd be a good test playing, again, Wild, Panthers, Predators, Pens, as far as teams that are equally as good in other parts of the league or right behind them to kind of – for them to compare apples to apples of where they're at this point of the season. And if they can continue to sit on the top of the Metro.
Yeah, then over sticking with the Metro, the New York Islanders currently are at 39 games. They have a long second half here as they have the most games to make up still. Do you see them as a threat in the Metro as making a wild card or the playoff spot? And do you think they have what it takes to repeat kind of what they did in the past two postseasons as far as Eastern Conference Finals?
I kind of look at the Islanders situation very similar to the Oilers as far as hitting a rough stretch, being behind in games. The Oilers proved that they're right there. They're only 6 points out in the Pacific, still with games to make up. But for the Islanders, despite having the least amount of games played in the league, I think that being in the Metro is going to be too tall of a task as far as the physicalness of that division, making up those games to where they're going to have back-to-back nights, three games within a 5-day period, probably at some point. I mean, sitting at 38 points, they're, what is that?
16 from the Penguins, and they're 8 games back. So if they win the 8 game differential that they do have, they're tied for basically second.
Yeah, but that's if they win every single one of them.
Right. Who knows who those 8 games are that they have to make up?
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, and a concern for me is their goal scoring. Again, they do have games to make up, but look at everybody else in that Metro. 145, 158, 156, 153, the Islanders have 93 goals. They haven't even broke 100 yet this year. So, yes, as impressive as their goaltending has been, only 105 given up, their goal scoring just isn't there to where, again, in that Metro, that physical, gritty division in games to where you need a go-ahead goal or you're trying to mount a comeback in the second, third period later in these games, that fatigue of these games sets in after a while. And as I mentioned, making up games, you're going to have back-to-back nights, packed weeks, and playing in this division, I don't think that they – I mean, if they were in the Pacific, the Atlantic, more of that fast-paced, like skillful kind of divisions maybe they have a shot, but yeah, given where they're at in that division, I don't think they get a wild card spot this year. They're just too far back.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you. I think they do make the playoffs, maybe even as a third seed and not just a wild card. The type of hockey that they do play isn't the most fascinating to watch, but they do play defense. That is their main goal. They don't score a lot of goals. They're not a flashy team. They don't like to, obviously they'll take the goals if they're there, but they're not out there to beat team 7-1 like some of these teams are, these higher end skilled teams. And being the most rested team at this point by almost 10 games, that so many more miles they have less that they are now about to expose on these teams that are worn down, run down. They're the fresh team coming out of the gate here for the second half. Granted, it is going to be a little unruly, but the style of hockey that they play, they aren't flashy. They aren't fancy. They're in your face, tough-nosed hockey. They are basically the staple of the Metropolitan Division as far as how you – the style of game you want to play. Yeah, I mean, with these games that they got to make up, like I said – I think that they, out of the 8 that they have to make up, I say they at least win 6 and leap the Capitals, no problem, before the end of the year here. As Caps seem like they're struggling hard.
Yeah, kind of looking at the Islanders' schedule here coming up, at least for the rest of the month, they have some opportunities against some of the lower teams, Sabres, Canadiens, Kraken.
And these are all the games that they got to make up because the Canadian teams, due to COVID.
Yeah, Oilers. Canucks is who they play tonight on Friday. They play the Oilers. So, again, kind of a good comparison as far as two teams trying to make up their games as far as being rested, as you mentioned, having less miles on them. The rest of the month, I mean, aside from finishing with the Kings and Ducks, Bruins in a couple games, so 3 of their last like 8 games here of the month are against tougher opponents. So yeah, they have an opportunity to finish at least February on a good note. But yeah, when it comes to making up those games down the road in March and April as well, because yeah, looking at March is going to be their most packed month. They have 17 games in March. So that's basically you're averaging a game every other day the whole month. Some including some back-to-backs. It's going to have, yeah, I see one back-to-back. Like for instance, in March here, they play Thursday, Friday, Sunday. So yeah, they play.
That's what they do games this week. They play today, they play Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, so
Yeah, they have a lot of back-to-backs coming up.
So, even I mean, as you mentioned, having less miles on them makes them, like, the fatigue factor isn't quite there yet, but they could burn out quickly in some of these where they play that third game in a four-day period. That third game is going to be tough to where they're gassed and they need a break, to where they are catching, making progress, but yet it's kind of a one step forward, two steps back as far as who they're matching up with, beating the right teams. Because if they keep losing to teams who are ahead of them, it's going to be hard to catch them. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. It's funny looking at the leaderboard, how they look so far back. I mean, they have an opportunity to come back, but like I said to start here, I think that they're goal scoring, because eventually they're gonna have a trip against the Atlantic. They're gonna have a trip against the Central. Both divisions, which the lack of goal scoring, I think, is going to come back to bite them.
Yeah, we'll see as it's coming up here. Yeah, and the games that they are making up soon here are the games they missed. Canucks, Flames, Oilers, Kraken, Sabres, Canadiens, Red Wings, Capitals. Those are all coming up here pretty soon. So I feel like after these next seven games, they're pretty much caught up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then some bonus news for you here today. Montreal Canadiens fire head coach Dominique Ducharme. They hire interim head coach Martin St. Louis, Hockey Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup champion, played for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Do you see he was the first small prototype to make it in the NHL? Given Montreal is a smaller team, do you see him having an impact on this Montreal Canadiens team and turning this around at all?
I mean, there has to be some kind of upside. 23 points, which is last in the league right now.
They're 8-30.
Yeah, 8-30-7. Yeah, I mean, anytime there's a big change like this on a team that's bottom of the league, just that kind of extra motivation of a new face, what do they bring to the table, that extra energy of I'm here to do this. This is how I'm going to do things different. I mean, the Canadians, they have games to, yeah, well, they have some games to make up, but yet they're kind of pretty much on pace with the rest of the Atlantic. So obviously no shot of them coming back as far as making a playoff push this year. I mean,
yeah, their season was over, I think, about a month ago.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for them.
But yeah, I mean, again, with their goaltending, without Carey Price, they have the most goals given up, I think, in the entire league here. I'm looking 179. Yeah, that's the most in the league. So being without him has been their Achilles heel all year. And even if he was there, their goal scoring, only 100 goals on the season, which puts them 20, 50, 90 goals behind Florida. So even then, if they had Carey Price, I don't think it'd make a huge difference. But yeah, as far as a coaching change, obviously it was kind of a long time coming for them. After, again, just the craziness of them being in a Stanley Cup final last year and turning out, looks like they're going to have that number one spot as the worst team this year. Never seen that before in any professional sports. But I mean, the only direction is up from here. You can't get any worse.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I do think Marty St. Louis will have an impact on this team, as he kind of knows how to operate the game from a smaller point of view, being a smaller guy. So I feel like he'll be able to help out the Gallaghers, the Caulfields, the Suzukis, the little bit smaller guys that they do have on their team, maybe find success that they aren't finding it with the current structure of how that team is being ran. And then what do you think about this move? Tuukka Rask decides to retire today after coming back and signing a league minimum $750K contract like a few weeks ago to rejoin the Boston Bruins. Fucking couldn't stop a beach ball. Now he's done. What do you think about that move for a team like literally bringing back an old vet and just fucking can him?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting move at this point in the year. I mean, Boston is still, they're kind of that middle point in the Atlantic. They're 8 points back, but 9 points ahead of Detroit. But I mean, for Detroit has three more games played. So as far as kind of trying to lock up a wild card there, they're in the driver's seat for that. But I mean, when it comes to the playoffs, as far as making a run, it's who's hot in the net. And that's usually who gives you a good indication of who's going to be there in your conference final and in the cup. And making a change like that for Boston, I think is going to be kind of detrimental to them as far as the postseason, unless they can have who are they rolling with earlier? Was it Allmark and Swayman?
Swayman, right? Yep.
Unless one of those two guys can step in and get hot again. I mean, anytime you have kind of a goaltender carousel during a year, I think it's tough in the end. I mean, like in the NFL, you have a quarterback carousel to where you don't have a number one guy that you lean on for big games, and then the playoffs, if you're rotating, or in this case, completely canning a guy. it's gonna be tough for them to make some noise in the playoffs if they make it. Because again, right now they're just in the running for a wild card.
And I mean, hell of a run for him, as he was a huge cornerstone in Boston, winning the couple Stanley Cups that they did, and also being there for 15 years. Goalies usually don't last that long in the league, mm-hmm. But it's kind of funny. He's going out with the worst stats than when he came in his rookie season. 07-08, he played four games, won two, lost one, won in overtime, 8.86 save percentage and 3.25 goals against. He goes out with four games played this season, 2-2 record, a .84 save percentage, and a 4.28 goals against. So the games that he did play, he got lit up this season, hence the beach ball reference. But hell of a career. Hope you enjoy your retirement. Stay in retirement now.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks everyone for tuning in to today's Offsides episode. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for more NHL, NFL news.